This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Atlanta's Episcopalians have elected their first African-American bishop. He is Bishop Robert Wright. Bishop Wright joins us in his office in Atlanta. Bishop Wright, congratulations. Welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here and great to have a time to talk to you.
The idea of being a first, it attracted, of course, the usual amount of attention, but not a lot. Yeah. Are we at a point now where that matters less than it might have even 10 years ago?
That's a great question. It did attract some attention, and I think that it caught the attention of some people who had sort of characterized the Episcopal Church in one way, and that way it was an opportunity. It was an opportunity to reconnect and get to know some people and invite them to take a second look at us, and that's the exciting part about it. I'm hoping for a day when we won't have these kinds of firsts, but you can use these kinds of events and occasions to connect with people who have sort of settled in to one way of thinking about the church or perhaps organizations, and invite them to think about you again. And that's the exciting part, is to connect with people afresh.
To put it crudely, do you think that people thought of the Episcopal Church, for all of its controversies and divisions recently, as still the province of relatively rich white folks?
Sure. I think that that is certainly one way to think of the Episcopal Church, and a number of people think of the Episcopal Church in that way. But actually, if you just click on us a little bit, you'll find out that one of our largest dioceses, the largest diocese in the Episcopal Church, is the church in Haiti. We actually are a group of believers who believe a certain way, who stand in a history of believing that actually has a lot to do with service, has a lot to do with inviting the thought and science into the way we believe. We've actually done a good job in sort of drawing the circle wider intellectually and spiritually. And, you know, people tend to get to stereotypes as a quick and crude way of trying to characterize you. But we're so much more than that.
Where do you need to go, though, to increase members? The Episcopal Church, like many mainline Protestant denominations, is seeing declines in numbers fairly consistently.
Right. I think where we need to go is to hold up some basic tenets of who we are. And who we believe God is big and loving and wise and generous. And the way we talk about God, by and large in the Episcopal Church, welcomes people from a lot of different positions and backgrounds. And that's the exciting part about it. We say you don't have to leave your mind to come and worship in the Episcopal Church. We say that however God made you, by and large, you're welcome. Certainly there are, we don't all agree on everything, but the sermon doesn't get the last word in our worship, and the creed doesn't get the last word in our worship. The table gets the last word. And so we say, we have some thoughts, but God is working on all of us. Let's have a meal together. And that's what Jesus himself did.
Let me pick up on that for a moment, because that's interesting. You should talk about the idea of welcoming all. In the General Convention earlier this year, I believe it was adopted that there would be a ceremony for blessing same-sex unions, but it didn't go so far as to say we would call these couples married.
Correct.
Doesn't that lend some sort of credence to people on both sides who might say, well, okay, they're blessed, but they're not married, so they're accepted, or maybe they're not, that people on both sides might say, hey, look, the Episcopal Church really doesn't take a stand on anything.
Sure. I mean, we could. I suppose we could. We could make it look like anything that you wanted to make it look like. I think what came through for me was that we took a pretty bold stand in saying that we believe that within the providence of God, God blesses all kinds, all sorts and conditions, and that as God's church, hands and feet in the world, we also want to, on behalf of God, say that all are welcome and all can be blessed. I think that's a pretty bold thing to say, actually. We got a lot of flack for having the conversations that we've had over the last 30 years about who's in the church, who's welcome and who's out, who needs to be excluded. And, you know, we didn't do that in a secret room somewhere. We didn't have a secret council. Well, we did that publicly. And I think we are to be praised for that. It was courageous. There are lots of kinds of people in congregations all over the country, and they're not welcome to be themselves. And we said, hey, we think this is so important. We think it has to do with dignity. We think it has to do with truth. And so we're going to have the conversation. Obviously, we've not made everybody happy, but I think we've taken bold steps. I think what we've said is that God is a blessing God. God is not a cursing and excluding God. And I'm proud of that.
But if that's the case, then why not go all the way and say these couples have, if they have the same blessings and the same standing, then they are married?
Well, as you know, at least in the state of Georgia, marriage is a legal construct. And so we don't have that ability here. So a blessing can't be marriage. It's non-binding. It has no status in the state law here. So we've gone as far as we can go here in the state of Georgia. We are saying that the two people who happen to be of the same sex, who are committed to a lifelong union, Christ as the head of that union, we say that we can pronounce God's blessing. We say that we can hold up your relationship up to God and up to the community of believers. And I'm glad we're doing that. So, yeah, the legislature is pretty clear. More than three quarters have voted that that they will not amend this notion of marriage. And so the church is in some ways being the church. It's advocating and agitating for something, I think, brighter than what we presently have.
On the other hand, I think the Bishop of South Carolina left the convention because of that. Would his diocese, though, have to perform those ceremonies if a couple requested it?
Yeah, no one. If you go back and you'll read what we actually passed at General Convention, you know, the mind of convention was to offer this as a provisional liturgy, as a provisional ceremony rite, if you will. And no clergy person, no diocese, no bishop was asked to do violence to their conscience over this matter. And so it's tragic for me to see that people feel like they need to walk away and to do it in some ways in such a caustic way, caustic fashion. We pride ourselves, I think, the core, we pride ourselves on being able to stay at the table and stay in prayer and stay in fellowship and try to discern God's will together. But if people feel like their conscience and their core is calling them away, then I say go with God. I don't think we have to disagree in a fashion the way oftentimes we are disagreeing.
Where does that leave a gay couple, though, in South Carolina that wants the blessing and the ceremony in the Episcopal Church?
I think it leaves that couple, where a lot of couples are, in trying to find a community that is welcoming and that where they can live out their faith. I think it sets them on a journey to find a minister, a community, a place for them to live in the light of Christ and to learn and to deepen their journey together. And so I think some people are sending a clear no. And you know, clear no's sometimes open up the best yeses. And so I hope that they will find communities that are loving and welcoming.
Why not, though, say, okay, you, Bishop, don't have to perform that ceremony if you don't want to, but the diocese should, since this is a position that the church as a whole is adopting?
Well, you know, I don't want to get too far down the road with Bishop Mark Lawrence, and it is his prerogative, certainly, to lead in the fashion he feels called to lead in. What I think is really unfortunate is that we've made so much of modern day Christianity around sexual orientation, and it, frankly that is one part of our discussion now. I think that young people are so far beyond this, and I think that they're the ones who are really driving the conversation. So far as I'm listening, they want to know what's different about us. They want to know about the service. They want to know about they want us to answer the why questions. You know, the world is doing a really good job at answering the how much question and the what question. But a lot of kids and a lot of young people, a lot of young adults are found really just empty of meaning and purpose. And I think that's the conversation that the world really wants us to have out loud. And that's certainly the conversation I'm interested in the Diocese of Atlanta. The church has settled its mind around this issue. We'll bless all kinds. And now we're on to this new horizon. There's a new wind blowing, I think, actually. I think that in many ways, there's a lot of bad church out there, you know, and the tenets of bad church are guilt and shame and obligation and condemnation. And I think people have rightfully said no to that. But what people are saying yes to is there a God out there who can embrace all of me? Is there a God out there that's real? Is there a God out there that that understands science to be a sibling of faith? Is there a God out there that has some benevolent community, you know, in mind? And what's my role in all that? I think that's the mission of the church nowadays.
You anticipated my next question, which is we've spent a lot of time in many denominations arguing over sexual identity, sexual orientation, yet those are core matters of faith for some people. How do you, on the one hand, address them, and on the other hand, address all of the other things that a diocese like yours has to address?
Right, and I think it's a matter of priority. And here again, we have the richness of Scripture to guide us. I mean, if we want to actually use Jesus as the head and North Star of the church, as we should, then how much time did Jesus spend talking about human sexuality? He didn't. I think to go back and to have a closer read of Scripture, we get the priorities that are necessary for us now, and they are embracing young people, including young people, inviting people on an adventure called faith, welcoming men and women alike, you know, getting to the margins, finding a way to bless people on the margins, taking a look at our structures, discerning what is evil in some of our systems, and being about the business of saying that we think that this is beneath us as a civilization. I think that is what Jesus did, and I think that's what Paul did later on as he traveled the known world. And so I think that that's what's exciting about our journey here in the Diocese of Atlanta and beyond.